Go Loud presents Murder Most Irish. Find it first on the Go Loud app and on all major podcast platforms.
For being lovely. That's what the excuse me, if the devil has it out for anybody in this house, it isn't me.
That's what the devil
is. Homosexual in the nature. Leave all of this in. Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Murder Most Irish.
We're having some snacks, but I'll stop eating now because everybody will be like,
hello.
Someone is absolutely listening to this, pulling the stomach off themselves.
People 100% watch those, and we've talked about it openly on the previous. People listen to those ASMRs, and I have no doubt that there are a rare few.
Yeah,
but there are people out there.
But some of them, do you not find some of them are?
Yeah,
like sexual.
There's a number on TikTok that I had to block. So I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah, some of them give me a.
Go on.
Something's going on here now.
Oh,
they know what they're doing.
Yes.
Like, especially the ones where there's a lot of mouth.
My thing is when there's a lot of mouth, and here's my other thing, when they're done up to the nines.
Yes.
There's one girl, she comes up on my TikTok every now and then.
Is she Asian?
No, she's like American. She's blonde, blue-eyed. She's very pretty. And all she eats is like jelly things.
Oh.
So things made of jello. And there's a lot of...
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Slurping and squeezing shit into her mouth. And I'm like, maybe I'm the perverse one, because maybe that isn't what she's doing this for.
No.
But I just don't believe that the world is that
also
innocent.
I find it very hard. There's porn for everything.
Yeah.
Like, there's porn for everything in the world. So I find it very hard to believe that there's not like...
A kink in that.
A kink in that. Being like, I love listening to a woman slurping on jelly or whatever. Yeah. These fucking weirdos to be at.
Yeah, she just... And the other day she was like... She came on my channel because she'd like made something. Like it was in a big syringe and she was just like squirting it into her mouth.
Oh no, that's like, purely sexual.
The texture of that alone would make me gag. Like I know I'm on the borderline of the spectrum.
I know.
Because I am. I was thinking during the day about my problem with clothes. I was like, man, someone should have brought
like
me to a doctor.
Like textures and feelings?
Well, I just like, yeah. And you know me, I will buy like a item of clothing and then all of my other clothing does not exist.
Yes.
Until that item of clothing.
Until you're like, I want something else that's just as comfortable
and
feels nice on my body.
Yeah.
I get that. There are certain things like, I don't like sweaty fabrics. So you know those polyester shirts and stuff?
Yeah. Here, actually, this week's episode, I want to give a great big shout out to Rory. Rory, who I listen to, who I work with, is a straight man and listens to our podcast.
A heterosexual?
Yeah.
What's he listening to our podcast?
I don't know.
He says his favourite bit. Cough himself while I chew on something. There you go, Rory.
He said he likes the bit where we just talk, and he says he likes the story, but it's not his favourite bit.
Well, Rory, we didn't ask for your opinion, so...
I said, Rory... Thanks very much.
Mark on the box where I said, what do you think, Rory? It's not there.
The amount of people I meet that are like, yeah, I don't really listen to stories. Like, I listen to them because these are talking, but the bit I'm interested in is the bit at the beginning. I'm like, lads, if I had known that from the beginning...
No, but it,
I would have done things differently.
You get that, and then I get about stories.
What do you get?
That people love the stories, love the cases. I always get that.
We're fucking hanging around with the wrong people.
Different... Levels of the whatever.
I do want to talk about something that's been on my mind.
Me.
So, at least twice a month I come over to this house to make a podcast. I know it should be more, but...
It is what it is.
And I bring snacks.
Yeah.
And I bring things. And it's not a reciprocal relationship.
It's very much one-sided.
And I'm telling you now.
I have made you the snack person.
I am the snack
person. I've done that to you.
And I bring the snacks, and then when you come to my house, I give you more snacks. And I love feeding you. I love cooking for you. But
maybe sometimes you'd like a little payback.
Give me a strawberry or something, would you?
I will. I promise. Next time, I'll bring you snacks. I am terrible. I was actually thinking today when I sent you that message, and then I was like, oh my God, I sound terrible.
I did get you a Kit Kat, but I ate it.
Well, thanks, sir. No need to tell me
hey,
that story.
I brought you two did. You brought, pretzels. You bought,
these are really good, these pretzels. These are Marks and Spencer's pretzel thins, sesame, salted with black seeds and white sesame seeds.
And I brought you a Twixie.
You did, it was
and
delicious.
And I know I only brought column one, but I brought you two.
Did you?
Yeah. I didn't take out the second one in front of Collie.
Thanks very much.
Sorry, Collie. Now you know my secrets.
Oh, you smell amazing. What are you wearing?
Victor and Rolf one you
oh,
like.
It smells unreal.
That's like a what you call it? Crystal ball.
Oh, it's so good. Let me smell again. Oh, that's beautiful.
People in work today said I smell nice.
Smell lovely.
Hmm.
A lady stopped me on the bus the other day and asked me what I was wearing. I
didn't
know.
Did you say cat piss?
Pretty much. I said, I have no idea. And then I felt like she thought I was lying. I was like, I genuinely have no idea what I'm on my body like. I don't know.
You quite often smell like Jo Malone.
Yeah, but I don't have any Jo Malone. I have no idea what I was wearing.
I had topics in my phone, but I've changed my phone, so I don't know. The fucking problems I had yesterday with changing this phone.
Really? Why?
Because my MFA authenticator for work is set up on my other phone. Okay. And then I think because the IP address or something doesn't match. Oh, good fuck. I couldn't get into anything. And then today's a bank holiday in the UK, so I couldn't get anybody
is
in
it?
IT. Yeah.
What's it for? Colonialism?
I would say it's, what's the one with the poppy day, isn't it? May.
Oh, May Day or something,
yeah.
Is it?
Anyway, something they've done where they took over another country,
something
I'm sure.
They've done where they murdered loads of indigenous people.
So I couldn't get anybody in IT. So I had to go in and then physically print off my story.
1992 in this house.
Like, physically print off my story. Topics for Patreon.
That's for Patreon.
Yeah, well, I had, but I didn't. Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask anybody if they could send us in things of things that their mom pronounces incorrectly.
Oh, my God, yes, please.
Because I know I've talked about it on Patreon, but my mom's getting her teeth done at the minute. She sent me a picture of herself today and said, ponding's going well.
What's ponding?
I think she meant bonding.
Oh, bless her. Oh, bless
and
her.
I think she meant bonded.
Do you have pictures of her teeth?
Yeah, but they're very natural. You wouldn't be able to tell now that she's had...
Let me see. My
on.
Mother
probably delete it.
Pronounces sepsis septus and it drives me insane.
Septus.
I had septus. No, you didn't. You had sepsis. Nearly killed you and you can't even pronounce it. Yeah, she called it septus. What's another one that she says?
Well, I have loads for Graham's
mum. Prostate. She called it a prostrate.
Oh!
And it's prostrate. Once again, no, he doesn't.
Prostrate.
Got it in the prostate, Kathleen.
Yeah, let me see
my mum. Whenever I hear my mum saying septus, I can feel my eye physically twitching.
Yeah, she sent me a message. Hang on.
But I do love when people sometimes when people can't pronounce a word.
Oh yeah,
properly.
And this is the other thing. I don't have the pictures because when I read something out to you, I'll paralyze WhatsApp. User default timer for disappearing messages in new chat. New message will disappear from the chat 7 days after they've sent it, except when kept. Tap to set your own default timer. She has set up a timer on her WhatsApp
that like disappears messages.
As if she's having a fucking affair or something.
Does she know that she set that up, or is it like a
oh, I've
maybe
set
it's an
her.
Accident? Is it?
And
she's like, I have a lot of things to hide. And
like, so she has set this up. She uses a default timer for disappearing messages and new. So whenever she sends me shit, like the ponding thing, if I don't go in and like physically save it. It's
this bitch is like
yeah.
Gonzo. I know you can do that on Instagram as well,
yeah,
right?
Where you can. And I keep doing it on Instagram
by accident
because if you pull down,
it's so fucking irritating.
So I can't show you your teeth.
Yeah, send us stuff that your parents think is honestly.
Graham's mom says
me. Loads
of things, but my all-time favorite Graham's thing mom. Is she says scarf, but not like a normal human being. She says scarf,
a scarf.
She gets and then she goes from like, "How are you? Will you get me scarf?"
Like in that 1930s gangster.
Yeah, it's so odd.
Gotta get the goddamn scarf.
Yeah, she's like, I'm just gonna wear my scarf.
But you say loads of stuff.
I say loads of stuff wrong. Like, loads
the
of
way
loads
you say loud kills me.
I can't say it any other way. As in the loud.
You say loud.
Lout.
No, you say loud.
Lout. Lout. I'm heading to Lout.
Where are you? Going Lout. Are you?
But mine are just THs.
Yeah, it's just THs.
Yeah.
Which is a real Dublin thing, but it's also a real Longford thing as well. People in Longford don't pronounce their THs properly. That's a really big Longford thing. That was like bet out of me
Graham's
when I was a kid.
Graham's mom said Mezzodin.
What's Mezzodin? Oh, medicine.
She says recycling.
She says Pischetti as well, Graham told me.
And the Pischetti thing is like you with your mum. Like Graham's
you're
like
spaghetti.
German Shepherd's Pie is my favourite one.
Shepherd's Colin. I write it down. We're calling this episode German Shepherd's Pie. Hold on.
She calls it German Shepherd's Pie, and it's just the funniest thing. And then she says, you know, like wedge chips. Wedges?
She calls them wedgies.
Anyway, if your mom says anything, or not even your mom, if anybody in your
honestly, life, nothing is going to be German Shepherd's Pie, because that's German, like, my Shepherd's favorite pie thing in the entire universe.
She genuine. She like,
oh, she, what's she called? Jalapenos. Al Pacinos.
Al Pacinos.
Love that as well.
I only get a jar of Al Pacinos for Graham.
Love it.
So that's Paula in the shops.
Also,
someday.
I fucking hate jalapenos.
Graham loves jalapenos.
When I get something and there's jalapenos in it, I'm like, this is gross. I don't know if I should say this.
Go on.
I imagine it's what it feels like to bite into, like, your finger.
Oh, you know what your finger is like to bite into. Do you not know what your finger is like to bite into?
No, because my brain won't let me.
Yeah, but it's carrot.
Yeah, but it gives me that, like, when they're wet, you know, they're in the jar.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't deal with them. And they put them in everything.
They do.
And you know where else they put them in everything? Fucking Portugal.
Well, I mean,
olives and fucking jalapenos.
Oh, olives, no.
They're just obsessed with olives. I'm like, can I get this without olives? They're like, extra olives?
I don't like olives.
I was like, there's a reason you fuckers were colonized like us.
Well, is there? I don't like olives at all.
I hate olives.
Yeah, I don't like,
but
the
your
flavor.
People either love olives or they fucking hate olives. Like, people, olive lovers
love an olive.
They're gonna take that shit to the grave.
There's a man I work with that eats a tomato every day, like an apple.
Really?
On his lunch.
Is that like, is anybody
I had a conversation
like
with him about
questioned
it.
Okay, good.
And then the other guy I work with was like, did you say to him about the tomato? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, why
like,
are you eating a tomato?
And
like
he was
an apple?
Like, I've been watching him for years and I just leave the room when he does it. What?
Yeah, because there's something like they're not meant to be eaten like that. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Also, I don't like this. As
he brings it in a little plastic bag.
Oh, bless him.
And he just sits and eats it.
He's like, my wife used to give me a tomato in a bag,
and I loved her so much.
Is that what he said? No.
No. He was just like, he's just like, yeah, it is what it is.
Tomato boy.
But Rory was like that growing up. Rory would come into your house and be like, have you got any tomatoes?
Really?
Yeah. And he'd just eat them.
Rory.
Ruser.
He listens to the podcast.
No, he doesn't listen to the podcast.
No.
Oh, Rory.
Okay.
I said Rory and Rory.
Which,
and I think if you listen back to the tape.
Which one's Rory?
Rory I
work with. And Rory is.
Rory is my godson.
I thought this guy was called Rory as well.
No.
A straight man.
Yeah. Hey, did you see the stuff coming out of Tyler Creator's gig? It looks like so much fun.
Oh, there was loads of people I know.
Oh,
they had a great time.
It looked like a ball. People looked like they had the best time ever.
He's great anyway.
I know, but Punk is alive or dead. It's just not at Punk shows.
Do you know what I said?
Go on.
I put a Debbie Downer on it.
Go on.
I said about 70% of that people are saying the N-word in everyday life and being racist. And then they'll pop on over to a Tyler Creator gig.
Say that too?
I said to Colin. He said, Emma... Get the fuck out of my bedroom.
Emma, he's right. He's right.
Plus, I always find it must be very disconcerting for people of colour who come to Ireland and, like, it's just predominantly white people in an audience.
Yeah.
And your songs have the N-word in it.
Yes.
That would make me, like...
But
ugh.
You just don't sing that bit.
Well,
I don't.
I would never, but I am sure.
Like,
that...
you know, I listen to Kendrick. Lily listens to Kendrick.
Yeah.
And
no,
we just go quiet
that word,
at that
yeah.
bit.
But like, I remember Frank.
And sometimes you're like, go quiet, and then you're like, what bit am I going quiet? And then you go quiet for 2 months long.
There is an artist. What the fuck is that guy's name? He's really good. I can't think of his name. Vince Staples. Vince Staples has a song called Lift Me Up. I love it. It's such a great song. And there's a verse in the song where he's like, basically talks about going to. Like playing a concert and there's all these white people just screaming the N-word back at him and he's like, you have to compartmentalize the fact that you've written this music for an audience. They're not all going to be the same color as you and you're making money off these people that are saying one of the worst things that they could ever say back at you and it's your song. And I was like, that's so fucked, man. Like, how do you deal with that? Like, imagine standing up on stage, and we can never imagine, but as a black person, and there's a 50,000 white people screaming the N-word at you.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's fucking dark.
And you're becoming a millionaire because of
it. Yeah, and you're like, I'm incredibly wealthy and I'm well known, but this is what I have to... Do you know what I mean? It's a very mixed thing. I don't... But yeah, that song is great.
So I know I've been at show... I was at Kanye West show before he was the way he was for anybody.
Before he went Lula.
Fucking comes for me. And he like made this speech before where he was like,
don't say the N-word.
No, he was like, I want you to sing the song with me. I was like, I can't.
No,
I can't even, like that
no, saying that word.
Strange Fruit song makes me uncomfortable singing it.
I know, but I don't know, it's an odd one because I'm sure if you ask, there's many black artists that are like, don't just don't say the word.
Yeah, just don't say just the word. Don't say the I word. Don't understand why
but
you.
But then there was like when Childish Gambino was here the last time, someone put up a video of one of his songs and he cut the sound and it was just a fuck ton of Irish people saying the N word.
Oh!
So I was like, I hate this. And I'm not going to bad. It's one of the reasons that I'm like, don't want to go to these things because I'm like, this is so fucking uncomfortable. I don't know how to. Because you know these bitches are like, will just want to say it so bad. Like in the context of like that they can get away with it almost.
Oh.
Maybe I'm being a Debbie Downer. I am being a Debbie Downer, but I just whenever I listen to that Vince Staples song, I'm like, how the fuck do black artists deal with this?
Mm.
Like not want to get down off the stage and start swinging digs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's not our word for us.
Yeah, I just don't say it.
In the same way that your stupid cunt is my word for us, me and you.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
I don't know what is fucking up your arse today, right? But it's unnecessary and it's not required.
I have one thing to talk about.
Housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
Yeah.
Someone did say to me today, they're like, whenever I should say, they were like, sometimes I'm in my house and I go, housekeeping.
I guess the only thing I really have is thank you to everybody so far who's bought tickets to our show.
And to everybody who hasn't bought tickets. Would you like to get the thing around?
Okay, we'll end of that then. But yeah, thank you to everybody that has bought tickets so far. The show is on the 24th of July in the Laughter Lounge. Colin has a whole thing planned out. We don't know what's happening.
Well, maybe we should find out what's happening because maybe then people will buy tickets.
It's going to be Colin, put in. No, he won't.
Colin.
It's going to be a Matrix themed thing.
Hey, let's come in here. Colin.
Hello there, everybody.
The RT voice.
I've been told by these women here to describe to you what this live show is going to be like. So I'm going to attempt to do so right now. This live show is going to be like sex, magic, electricity, sugar, rainbows, leprechauns and unicorns in a blender and shot into your fucking veins. This might just fucking kill you. No, it's going to be great. We're going to have just a live show experience, a wonderful case, a wonderful funny introduction. Can't do too much comedy because the man will kill us.
What man?
What man? Remember that angry man was like, I don't understand why these true crime people are invited to do.
That hack who desperately wants to get invited to the sugar or to the Laughter Lounge even though we got invited twice and he didn't get invited.
Yeah, that hack.
Zero times?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the hack of him. But anyway, yes, it's going to be a tasteful mix of comedy and true crime all wrapped up in a Matrix-inspired Tokyo techno-pop fucking bow of leather and green, and there'll be musical. Yeah, leather and green. That's a very.
That's the team because that's what the Matrix looks like. Leather and green. Leather, yeah. Okay. Are you going to wear leather? Do you have any leather items?
No, I have a jacket.
Me too.
That's funny.
I have a jacket.
I have a jacket.
I wear a leather jacket. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wear a leather jacket.
I used to have the Matrix phone book.
What's sure.
You know the green one that you popped.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then with the second one, I had that one too.
No, basically all it'll be is I'll play it some says that song. You know that song that goes do 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 do
do do do do do do do do
do do do do do do do do
do do do do do do
do do do do do
do do do do
do
do do do do do
do do
do do do do
do do do
do do do
do do right, I'm going to take this back and workshop it. But hey, remember all the things I said about the unicorn and the sex and the electricity, because that's all true. Yeah,
come
the show is on in
July 24th.
July 24th.
The Laughter Lounge.
The Laughter Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
And
stores are at 7, shows at 8.
Yep, and it's going to be great. And I'm going to have DJ. A DJ. Well, I'm going to have a DJ equipment. I'm not going to be doing anything like DJing. I'm just going to be playing a couple of old tunes.
Nice. Okay,
cool.
To entertain you when you arrive.
Thanks, Collie.
Anyway, I'm not going to let. It's nice to be back at the podcast, everyone. Hi.
Yay. Yay.
You won't let me on anymore.
We do let you.
Yeah.
We've never stopped you coming on this.
Get topic. The fuck out.
They've gone real fucking mean. Why do you think there's no Lily's Tales anymore?
Lily won't do it. Well, actually, I'll ask her to do a Lily's Tale. When we ring her?
She might do it. Now. She might do it.
When we ring her and ask her to do it?
She'll go,
no.
Actually, say it.
I have something to talk about that's a bit of a... I'm a real Debbie Downer today. I'm sorry, but I want to talk about this because it's been something, it's, apart from everything that's happening in Palestine, don't get me started. There is currently something that's happening in the United States that is one of the most fucked up things I have ever seen, heard about, have ever could possibly think was happening. There is a lady by the name of 30-year-old nurse, black nurse by the name of Adriana Smith, in the United States, who went into hospital because she had headaches. And while she was in hospital, they discovered she had a number of clots in her brain. So Adriana went into the hospital to get checked out, and unfortunately she passed away in the hospital. So when she was in the hospital, they discovered she was 6 weeks pregnant.
Yeah.
So instead of letting this girl die,
they put her on life support.
They put her on life support and are currently trying to keep her baby alive.
Right. Yeah.
It is the most draconian, fucked up thing. I cannot wrap my head around it.
We did that here.
I don't understand it. I know we did it with Savita Halapanavar. We tried to keep Savita alive as possible while her baby was fucking in diners.
Before Savita, we did it to another person.
It's so unbelievably dark. The people that are doing this to this girl, when I tell you, should be arrested and placed in jail. There are doctors who don't agree with what's happening, but they can't do anything, because if they do, they'll be arrested and put in jail. Her family were given no choice, no option with what to do with their brain dead daughter, and are currently awaiting the birth of this child, who, by the way, will 100% be born with severe disabilities and deformities. And they've basically, doctors said, the chances of it living past 15 minutes are between slim and none.
Mm.
So this poor girl is lying in a hospital bed, brain dead, as a fucking incubator. Mm. Because the Republicans, and fuck the Democrats, because they haven't done shit, have decided that the life of a person, a life of a grown human, is more important than something the size of a fucking peanut.
Yeah.
And the most frustrating thing about this is that they will take a black woman and use her as an incubator, which is fully eugenics, first and foremost, and sounds like tests that they would carry out on black people anyway. And if that black baby is born, if that little black baby is born, and that little black baby is brought into the world, when it's five or six, a police officer will probably shoot it in the head, and then it'll be like, well, they were just doing their job, because black children don't matter to that fucking country. So I'm just can't wrap my head around any of this. Like, and to hear the doctors be like, we're trying to keep it alive, but when that baby is born, it's not going to survive.
Yeah.
So now you have a family with a brain dead daughter, and she's going to do a C-section on her to take out a dead child.
Hmm.
So they have two burials to do.
Can I ask a pressing question?
What?
Who's paying for it?
We don't know. And no answers are forthcoming. So we don't know if it's the family. More than likely, it's definitely not the hospital. It's definitely not the state. And it's definitely not the government.
So in theory, if like, because insurance is really important in the States, right? And they don't have universal healthcare like here. So if I'm dead, and I'm medically dead, my insurance stops.
Stops, yeah.
So she's dead.
She's dead, yeah.
So she's not insured anymore.
And
the insurance company will 100% argue that they're not paying for it. They're
like, she's dead. We didn't tell you to keep her alive.
Yeah.
So 100% this is falling back on the family. So it is to watch not only what's happening is so
hard. And I know that's not the most important question
is important. Like, how expensive is it to have a baby in the United States? So it's that expensive to have a baby in the United States. How expensive is it to keep somebody on...
The baby's only 6 weeks old.
6 weeks old. They're going to keep that bit girl on life support for eight months?
Yeah.
How much is that going to cost?
Yeah.
Who's covering this? Her family are torn between, like, we want this baby to be okay now that this has happened, and our daughter is dead.
Dead.
She is dead. And it's like, to do the level, it's disgusting. But they're doing it to a black woman on purpose, Sarah Jane. I'm telling you, they're doing it to a black woman on purpose. Like, this is just so dark. It's so fucked up. It's so messed up. The abortion laws in that country are so fucked that this is what's currently happening.
Isn't it insane that The Handmaid's Tale?
Handmaid's Tale, yeah.
It's literally a story in that.
Yeah.
But everything that happens in The Handmaid's Tale in that book is stuff that has happened to women.
Yep.
So it's already happened previously.
It's just...
But it's insane to me to be like, that's one of the most watched shows in the USA.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, oh, what a like faraway talk.
What a crazy idea this is. No, this is literally.
Yeah.
Women are, you are seen as an incubator. And then when that child is brought out into the world, it is seen as something that can make money in capitalism.
Yeah.
They will cry and cry for the unborn. And as soon as your two little feet hit that floor, they couldn't give two fucks what happens to you. You can starve to death for all they care. It's just, I don't understand. My heart goes out to her family. My heart also goes out to anybody that lives in the United States who has an iota of common sense.
Mm.
How are you waking up every day with this bullshit?
Yeah.
Your government is paying for a genocide.
It also is about to pass a tax bill that's linked to the debt ceiling. So they have no choice but to pass it. That is going to give, I think, 140 million in tax credits to the rich.
Yeah.
And take about the exact same amount off people on Medicaid.
He called it the big beautiful bill.
The big beautiful bill. And the only thing I will say is that the people who voted for him are about to feel it impact them.
Yeah.
And they're about to feel it a bit. That you have people who have like MS, like long-term health conditions that are on Medicaid, that are all of a sudden not going to have cover.
Gone. Like people who voted for this man who have ongoing heart problems and cancer and their children are sick.
Yeah.
And they thought, I'll vote for Donald because he'll just get rid of the they, thems and the immigrants.
Yeah.
And no, that's not what he's going to do.
His wealthy friends more wealthier. Wealthy.
And they're like, oh, I'm really happy I voted for him. No, you're not.
Could be.
You're a dumbass.
Also, the plane thing makes me laugh.
Did you see that video of Macron?
Yes. Getting like beaten up by his wife.
What the fuck was that?
Yeah. And she didn't come out for like a number of like minutes.
She shoved him.
And then he realised he was out in camera. Yeah. Like they were having a fight.
They were having a full blown fight on that plane.
And she was physically hitting him.
But their relationship's weird anyway.
Mm.
Their relationship's been weird from the get go.
Oh really?
Yeah. Let me tell you.
Anyway, while she's looking up that thing, let me tell you about Donald Trump's plane. So Donald Trump got, America got given a plane for 4 years while Donald Trump was president. Is it Qatar or Saudi Arabia?
I think it's Saudi. It's Qatar, yeah.
And after 4 years, he's taking it back off the American people. But they've just spent, I think, something insane, like $100 million to look after the current Air Force One program. So now this plane has to go into that program because it has to be stripped back to make sure there's no bugs on it, and then it has to be essentially rebuilt again in terms of the inside to put it up to Trump's standards.
What's the standards?
A
gold toilet and
McDonald's.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, gold toilet and McDonald's. And it's going to cost the American taxpayers more money. And then also after 4 years, it doesn't belong to America. It's given to Donald Trump because it was given to him
as a gift.
And let's just talk about Donald Trump's dinner he had last week. Donald Trump had a dinner last week where if you donated a certain amount of money to that crypto Shaheem, that like buy crypto, you got access to the president. This is just, when I tell you this is a breach of every law.
Access to him?
You got access. So the more money you bought in Donald Trump's crypto, you then got an invitation to come to this dinner. And it was supposed to be in the White House. And then obviously the media was like, this is fucking insane. Like this is a literally a direct, like, you are not allowed to do this. No. This is against the Constitution.
What the fuck?
You cannot sell off access to the President of the United States. It is literally a breach of the Constitution.
Did he move it down to Mar-a-Lago?
So he just did it in his own private residence, but it's still as the president, and he will not release the names of who attended. So if you're, and some people leaked, like some people openly said that they were going, and they're like big business. You've got people who have like oil business, people who have like are looking for support from the president to get stuff passed.
100%.
And some of these people to get access, I think the minimum to gain because of like the number essentially got higher and higher because people just kept buying is a minimum of $400 million.
What?
And all of that money just goes to his family. This is not going back into the United States. And it's insane to me that, like,
it's just happening.
But it's insane to me that, like, the Democrats aren't out just this is all they need care. To talk about.
They don't care.
Like
Sarah Jane, they don't care. They don't care.
Access like, to president is, and being sold off at a premium.
No, they do not fucking care. Like watching the Democrats sit by with their fingers up their arseholes, giving money to Israel to slaughter Palestinians, and then being like, why did we lose?
Yeah.
Why do you think you lost, you fucking dumb bitch? Anyway, listen to it. Macron is married to Brigitte Trogneau, his former La Providence high school teacher in Amiens, close to his 25 years his senior. They met during a theatre workshop when she was giving what, when he was 15 years old and she was 39. His parents initially attempted to separate the couple by sending him away to Paris to finish the final year of his schooling, as they felt his youth made the relationship inappropriate. The couple reunited after Macron graduated and were married in 2007.
Stop it.
That's how they met.
How old is he now?
Let me check. He is... what age? Age, see. What year was he born? He was born in 19... He's 47. She is...
He's 7 years older than me. Are you telling me what?
She met him at school. Brigitte Trogneau. She is...
she must be 60.
Yeah, she's 62. She's 72!
He's banging a 72-year-old? Maybe she's got dementia.
Also, he said that the push in the face was a joke. They were just joking. Brother, that was not a joke. She smacked the head off you. She went...
yeah, no, she... right, and his face, he was like...
And then he was like... Being a politician is wild. Being a politician
isn't,
is crazy.
Isn't he just the stereotype of every like little French politician?
He's a little bitch. Seen. That's what he is. Like, oh, fuck it. A little bitch.
A little bitch. A little pussy ass bitch.
That's all our ranting done, I think.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Are you sick of being got at by boredom? Well, Sarah Jane and Emma know the perfect remedy for you. A subscription to the official Murder Most Irish Patreon. For only €6 a month, you can not only support the show, but binge out on exclusive weekly content. Murder Most Irish Patreon for all your murder feminist needs.
Right, here we go.
I'm excited.
Right, here we go. So, this week's story, I'm not going to tell you what it's about, I'm just going to start.
Okay.
And I've got loads of references, and you'd be very proud of me. I put all the links and everything.
Look at you.
I know, and I even put little, look, I have little, I've learned how to do this in work, so I now do it all the time. I put little icons beside things.
Oh my God.
Look, Sinn Féin reacts.
Oh my God. Will you do me a favour, will you send me the references?
Yeah. So anyway, the references are Wikipedia, the Irish Independent, the BBC, Wikipedia again, Belfast Telegraph, The Sun.
Just all the good ones, Sarah.
Reuters, Irish Examiner, The Irish Sun, The Guardian, and The Irish Examiner again. Okay. In the late evening of December 19, 2004, three men posing as police officers knocked on the door of Christopher Ward, his modest home in Poleglass, a working class estate in West Belfast. It was a quiet Sunday night. Ward, a 24-year-old employee at the Northern Bank's cash centre, had been relaxing with his family, his parents and younger siblings who lived with him, when he opened the door. The men claimed they were conducting a security check related to terrorist threats and they needed to speak with him privately. The moment they stepped in, the tone shifted. They produced handguns, took control of the house and ordered everyone to remain calm and follow instructions. Ward's mother and father were corralled into the living room, visibly shaken, while his younger sister's siblings were told to sit still and keep quiet. They were told, "We are taking your son and he will be doing a job for us tomorrow. If this all goes okay, you will all be fine." Oh. One of the intruders stayed behind to watch over the family, pointing his gun at them and warning them that any attempt to raise the alarm or flee would result in an immediate harm. The threat was chilling and direct. The gang then turned to Chris, telling him to retrieve his Northern Bank uniform and prepare to leave with them.
Quick question. Is Northern Bank like our...
Bank of Ireland.
Oh, I thought it was like our... Brinks? No. So no. It's just like an actual bank. Okay.
So it doesn't exist anymore.
Ah, okay. Probably for good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he hesitated, they reminded him in cold, calculated tones that his entire family's lives were in his hands.
I would have said, well,
I said, well, kill him first.
Well, you don't know me, so.
Hey, he's insured.
That one!
I know you're asking me to go to the bank tomorrow and take the money, but I'll give you half the insurance money as well. With no real choice, Ward complied. He was then blindfolded and bundled into a vehicle. Throughout the night and into the next day, the Ward family remained captives. Whilst the intruders were there, Rose and Gerard were under constant watch. Gerard noted that the intruders were careful to constantly clean, as everything they touched, they cleaned after touching it. And they were really careful as well. They like stayed at certain areas and didn't move from them.
Oh.
Which just to me sounds like that's a paramilitary operation, right?
Yeah, that's a profesh.
Yeah.
We know what we're doing type situation. Yeah. It's not like two lads being like, we're going to the bank.
Yeah. Like, no. So like the other thing, and we'll get into it, but there was like zero DNA evidence found in these houses.
Holy fuck.
They like cleaned.
Oh, they knew exactly what they were doing.
He also said that he never saw a weapon.
Okay.
Whilst they were being held, but he said that didn't make him think there wasn't one.
Yeah, it's the implication.
It's the implication.
It is the implication.
Ward was driven to the home of his supervisor, Kevin McMullen, in Lochan, Island, County Down. Just after dusk on Sunday, December 19, 2004, Kevin McMullen, a senior official at the Northern Bank, so Kevin is like the key holder.
Okay.
Right? And his wife, Karen, were settling at their countryside home in Loch Innes Island. The peace of their evening was shattered when armed men in dark clothing forced their way in. The gang, later described as highly organised and calm, quickly asserted control of the house. Kevin and Karen were separated immediately, a deliberate tactic to instill fear and control. Kevin was told, in no uncertain terms, he would cooperate or his wife would be killed. They said, "You'll be going to work tomorrow. Do exactly as we say and she'll be fine. Make one mistake and you won't see her again." While Kevin was taken away under guard, Karen was then held hostage in her own home overnight. She was forced to remain in a single room while one of the intruders kept constant watch over her. The gang made no effort to conceal their purpose. They were orchestrating a massive robbery. On the morning of December 20, 2004, under the shadow of the grave trek to their families, Kevin McMullen and Chris Ward arrived at Northern Bank headquarters in Donegal Square West. Throughout the day, the robbers maintained constant communication with McMullen and Ward via mobile phones. So they were both given mobile phones.
Okay.
They were both told when to answer, that they had to respond. They were both told, if you do not respond to us, if there's a delay, that we will kill your loved ones.
Dude, imagine like...
Imagine going to work and pretending everything's okay. Like,
hey, what the fuck?
Because I worked for GSLS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had to do all the tiger kidnapping training. And I used to have to take different routes home from work and stuff. I was like, listen, if someone comes.
That's crazy.
If you give me half.
Quarter. Give me a quarter. But yeah, just like the idea of the two of them meeting up and being like, we both know what's going on here. And we can't, like, that's fucking... And like his wife's at home in a bed, single bedroom, like.
By herself.
Jesus Christ.
Throughout the day, the robbers maintained constant communication with McMullen and Ward via mobile phones, issuing precise instructions. The two employees were directed to carry out their usual routines at the bank, ensuring that no suspicion was aroused amongst the colleagues. Under the gang's orders, they prepared crates filled with millions of pounds in cash. A combination of new and used banknotes, and moved them to the bank's loading bay. A white van arrived at the loading bay in two trips. The stolen money was collected. The operation was executed with such precision that other bank staff remained unaware of the ongoing robbery. So they were just like...
They had no clue.
No.
They were like,
and if he's a key holder and he's moving money around...
They're like, that's his job.
Yeah. In total, guess how much they got? Two van loads.
2 million?
£26.5 million.
Holy fuck, I was like, that's insane.
£26.5 million was squirreled away in those vans that day. Which, two vans?
Full.
Yeah, full with cash.
Holy shit. He was like, that's crazy to think that he moved 26 million around that bank without anybody knowing.
Yeah.
Like, nobody knew.
Because this is the cash area of the bank.
Yeah.
So... Now, most banks don't hold cash like that. It's actually all with Brinks.
Yeah.
or GSLS or any of those companies, and they hold large, vast amount of money in their vaults, and they move money around. Because when I, years and years ago, I had a college job and I worked in the kitchen at Bank of Ireland in College Green, and that had a similar situation happen.
Oh, really?
And it was never publicly reported.
Fuck off.
Because it was somebody inside.
So they just didn't talk about it?
Yeah, they took money out of the bank and they were moving money in and out of the bank in the back.
And nobody, they just because they knew it was inside
and then
job.
They left the country. And the bank never, like, it was obviously reported to police, but it was
but
never,
it was never publicly,
it was never in the, it was never in the news.
Banks are crazy. Like, that's sort of like the fear to be like, I have this not only do I have control of the money, I am the person that some motherfucker is going to come looking for if they want the money.
It's also insane. So, like, I obviously used to be in the vaults.
Yeah.
And there's gold, there's precious metal, there's,
like, it's just, not just money, like.
There is, like, millions and millions and millions of euro. And then the other side of the vault is the warehouse side. And the warehouse side is all coin.
Yeah.
So it's still a vault, but it's a warehouse. And it's much more difficult to, like, shift coin because
it's
so heavy.
It's so heavy, yeah.
But yeah.
26 million.
And it's insane to be in a room with all that money and people just work. Like, the money, you're never going to ever see that much money in your
life.
You'll
never understand. You'll never grasp the concept of that amount of money, like.
And that thing of, like, crates of money, like, I have been in vaults where we just have, you know, like, what, your Tesco's delivery?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's that, but it's just full of money.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Did you ever take a euro?
No.
Go to the vending machine. Slam the house.
No.
This is free.
It's a
freebie.
The psychological pressure on MacMullen was immense. He was repeatedly told that the gang and any deviation or delay would result in the death of his wife, Karen. Despite the intense stress, both men complied fully with the orders of, with the robber's demands. So, there's psychological pressure on both of them, both of their families, but MacMullen is the key holder. He's a senior member of the team.
Yeah.
Like, I think the pressure on him is probably a bit more because
He's the guy.
He's the guy you need to get access.
You know?
Once the money was secured and the operation completed, the robbers made their final move. Karen MacMullen was driven deep into Drumcree Forest, a remote, rugged stretch of woodland in County Down.
That's fucking unnecessary. Jesus Christ, let her go, like.
There she was left alone in the freezing cold. She was disorientated with no sense of direction or location. And in the early stages of hypothermia, she eventually stumbled upon a passing motorist who took her to safety. The trauma endured by Kevin and Karen during this ordeal was profound.
That's insane, that poor woman. Like, she very well could have died.
Yeah, she very well, yeah.
Why the fuck are you putting her in a forest and fucking down? What are you doing, like?
Do you remember that other tiger kidnapping I covered and they put his wife in the mountains?
That seems to be the thing that they do, these non-paramilitary people.
These people who aren't related.
These people are definitely not paramilitary.
Ward's family was also released unharmed at 11 p.m. Ward contacted the police to report the robbery. There was immediately 50 people assigned to the case.
Oh.
As in the immediate aftermath of the 26.5 million heist, the Police Service of Northern Ireland launched one of the largest investigations in UK criminal history. The scale, precision and psychological manipulation used in the robbery shocked both law enforcement and the public. The cash was stolen from a high security facility in central Belfast in plain sight of staff, security systems and nearby offices, all without raising alarms.
It's crazy.
Within hours, the PSNI had mobilised 50 detectives, coordinated with forensic science in Northern Ireland, and began interviewing bank and analysing hundreds of hours of CCTV footage. Assistant Chief Constable Sam Kincaid, one of the PSNI's most senior officers at the time, held a press conference in Belfast and made the force's position clear. This was not a lucky crime. This was a well-organised crime. It required detailed planning, coordination and insider knowledge of the bank's operation.
100%. But isn't it crazy to think as well, though, like, it's like, oh my God, they took money. 50 of your best people, please. And it's like, we found this dead woman. Well, I mean.
There's a little boy who was found in a sewer.
Literally. And
we're
naked. We're just going to be like, let's just, like, move on with that.
And we're just not going to do
anything
about it.
Somebody stole the money. Yeah.
26 million.
We got to do something about
British
the money.
Punts.
That's crazy. That's so much money. Holy fuck.
Investigators believe that the logistical sophistication of the robbery timed across two households using parallel hostage operations, exploiting bank routine procedures and extracting millions without physical confrontation, pointed out to paramilitary Yay. Level operation. I said, it was a rat!
It was a rat.
As the investigation progressed, attention turned almost immediately to the Provisional IRA. We know these lads. We love them. We like to hear from them. It's the Shergar lad. They're back in town. They're about.
You know them. You love them.
We love to see them. Do you know what's great about them? In these stories, they tend not to kill people.
No.
So I can have a bit of laugh.
That's it. Nobody's dead.
Also, I don't give a fuck about the 26
complex
million.
Complex PTSD maybe, but nobody's dead.
Yeah, you know, I'm very sorry to the families, yeah. but I don't care about the money.
No.
The group, while officially observing a ceasefire since 1997 under the Good Friday Act, because remember, this is what 2004,
yeah.
was known for its history of precision operations, logistics networks, and a capacity for high-stakes action. Senior security sources told the press the robbery bore all the hallmarks of the IRA. Compartmentalized teams, sophisticated surveillance, and meticulous planning. This suspicion gained formal backing in January of 2005 when the Independent Monitoring Commission, or the IMC, an oversight body established to monitor paramilitary activity, issued a report stating, "We believe that the Northern Bank robbery was undertaken with the knowledge and the approval of the senior leadership of the Provisional IRA. The IMC report further concluded that some members of Sinn Féin's leadership, closely aligned with the IRA at the time, must have had knowledge of this operation,
oh.
though it stopped short of naming specific individuals. Initially, this shocked the public for its sheer scale and audacity. But within days, the robbery took on a political weight, which it's Northern Ireland. It was only ever going to go down the route of being politically funded. It took on a political weight that would shake the foundations of Northern Ireland's peace process. For many, this was not just a criminal act. It was a seismic political provocation with paramilitary fingerprints landing in the most delicate phase of power sharing negotiations. At this time, Sinn Féin, widely recognised as the political wing of the Provisional IRA, was involved in sensitive, high-stakes talks with the British and Irish government. These discussions were aimed at restoring devolved government to Stormont, following a series of political breakdowns related to weapons decommissioning and trust issues between Unionist and Nationalist parties. Just weeks earlier, Sinn Féin had made a gesture suggesting support for the final decommissioning of the IRA arms, sparking hopes that the process was finally nearing democratic normalisation. Then came the robbery. So, Sinn Féin reacts.
Jerry Adams said, "Hard learn here."
Well, actually, back then, were we allowed to see him? Yeah, we were.
Were we allowed to see him?
Yeah, 1997, yeah. Okay, yeah. Martin McGuinness, then Sinn. Do you remember Sarah Arrow, who just loves Martin? Like, her mum loves
she
Martin McGuinness.
They love a bit of Martin. Didn't
like, it? I think her mum had a picture of Martin McGuinness in her garden.
Like, almost like the Pope. Yeah, like, Martin McGuinness.
She loves Martin McGuinness. Martin McGuinness, then Sinn Féin's chief negotiator and former commander of the IRA in Derry, vehemently denied the accusation in the media interviews and public addresses. He said, These are politically biased allegations. The British government is using their incident to undermine Sinn Féin's growing political influence.
Martin.
McGuinness argued that the party had been making unprecedented progress toward peace and democratic participation, and that the allegations were designed to destabilise that momentum. Gerry Adams, Sinn Féin's longtime president, took an equally combative stance. He said, "This is nothing more than an attempt to criminalise our party and the Republican struggle. These accusations are politically motivated and lack evidence." Sinn Féin insisted that the IMC was not an impartial body, accusing it of being influenced by the British security services and unionist interests. They accused the British and Irish governments of exploiting the robbery to halt the rise of Sinn Féin, which had been gaining electoral strength on both sides of the border. The planned reactivation of the devolved government was put on an indefinite hold. The Ulster Unionist Party and the Democratic Unionist Party, leaders including David Trimble and Ian Paisley, used the opportunity to reinforce their long-standing claim that Sinn Féin could not be trusted while the IRA structures remained in place. Why would we feel any different about their party? Yeah.
Can I just say, Ian Paisley.
A cunt.
Ulster
says no.
Ulster. He's such an obnoxious.
He's dead.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, but his son is now.
Oh, is he another cunt?
Oh, I don't know now. I don't know about Paisley Jr., but I think
so. We don't know. Well, like, it comes from a lineage of cunts.
A lineage. I put a little TNT beside the peace processing power. A little dynamite stick. Someone should have not taught me how to format. So the peace process is now affected by all of this. So the robbery sharted.
Oh, Jesus.
Didn't format that out. The robbery shattered what little trust remained between the unionist and the nationalist communities, and between Sinn Féin and the British state. It reaffirmed fears that the provisional IRA, while claiming a ceasefire, still maintained an operational infrastructure capable of large-scale criminal activity and possibly with political protection. Even within nationalist circles, there was discomfort. Some of the Social Democrats and the Labour Party, long-time rivals of Sinn Féin, called on Republicans to come clean. Mark Durkin, the SLDLP leader, which is the Labour Party in Northern Ireland, said, "You can't have people in the government of Northern Ireland who are at the same time funding their activities through armed robbery." In response to political and public pressure, Sinn Féin stepped up calls for the IRA and all illegal activity, which eventually contributed to the IRA's landmark announcement in July 2005 that it was ending its armed campaign and instructing all volunteers to pursue only peaceful means.
Okay.
So it did have an effect.
Yeah.
But they had 26 million in the bank, so, you know. Allegedly. The Northern Bank robbery did not bring the peace process to a halt, but it came dangerously close. And in the shadows of Donegal Squares, the 26.5 million disappeared, and with it years of carefully built trust. The political shockwaves echoed far beyond Belfast, while talks of power sharing were still alive. They were suddenly steeped in suspicion, recrimination. Sinn Féin ascending in a political strength, now faced growing doubts, both at home and abroad, about its true separation from the provisional IRA. So people were just like, I still don't think that you guys are separated from the IRA.
Yeah.
The delay in restoring devolved government would last 2.5 years. That's crazy. Not until May 2007, under a hard-fought agreement between the Democratic Unionists and Sinn Féin, was the power-sharing executive finally brought back to life. True it all, the Independent Monitoring Commission stood firm. It never retracted its conclusion, and the robbery was sanctioned at the highest levels of the IRA. And yet, no senior Republican figure was ever charged. No public confession and no definitive proof. So, all that being said, it's now 2005. No one has been arrested, charged, questioned. No one publicly anyhow.
Where's the moolah?
So, like, we've gone from 2004 to now 2005. No one has been brought in publicly for questioning.
Yeah.
No one has been charged.
Can't find anybody.
It all just went through this, like, massive back and forth between, like, Sinn Féin and essentially government parties being like, you guys did this.
You did it. No, you did it.
So, as 2005 unfolded, the PSNI continued its intense pursuit of those responsible for the Northern Bank robbery. The operation had been executed with military precision, leading investigations with few forensic leads, but a massive political and public imperative to bring the perpetrators to justice. Despite the 26.5 million, very little of the money had surfaced in circulation.
Okay.
Thanks to the part, which I don't know if this was the right thing to do, but I think it may have helped them catch somebody, but who knows. Thanks in part to the decision by Northern Bank to reissue all of the banknotes.
Oh.
So they rendered most of the stolen currency completely useless.
Oh.
Unless laundered.
Okay.
The strategy would soon bear fruit. Guess where?
Where?
What part of the country do you think the money showed up?
Dublin.
No.
Where?
Where's the last holdout point in the war against the British?
Where?
The rebel county.
County Cork. There's always some fucking shenanigans going on down that place.
There is, honestly.
Always
the lads down in Cork.
Fuckers are always up to something, so yeah. The real capital.
The True Republic.
My sister texted me today and she's like, I'm back in the real capital. I said, fucking stay there.
Yeah, stay there. No one wants you. So, where was I?
Rebel County.
In February 2005, as part of Operation Phoenix.
Oh my God, Ireland is so embarrassing.
Garda raided a guy called Cunningham's home, discovering approximately £2.3 million in sterling banknotes hidden in various locations, including compost bins that were buried.
Gas.
The serial numbers on the notes matched those from the Northern Bank heist, and Cunningham was arrested and charged with 10 counts of money laundering.
Said I didn't know anything, boy.
Accused of handling over £3 million linked to the robbery. In March of 2009, after a 45-day trial at the Cork Circuit Criminal Court, he was found guilty on all 10 counts. The jury heard from 75 prosecution witnesses and 65 exhibits. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison, and his son, who faced related charges, received a 3-year suspended sentence.
Brought out to the square and shot.
He was hung from the neck.
Until you are dead.
That sentence. Colin came in earlier on. He was talking to me about a movie where someone was getting executed.
What shite was he watching?
And he said they were being electrocuted. Right?
Yeah.
He said they were being electrocuted until they were dead. And I said the second half of that sentence is unnecessary. I understand. And he's like, no, it is necessary because it didn't kill him.
The shit this boy watches. Oh my God.
Anyway, in May 2012. The Court of Criminal Appeal quashed Cunningham's conviction.
Why?
Ruling that the search warrant used during the 2005 raid was invalid.
Semantics, lads, that'll get you
off. Warrant had been issued under the Section 29 of the Offence Acts Against the State, which the Supreme Court found unconstitutional. A retrial was ordered for 9 of the 10 original charges. Which is true, like, it's not an act against the state.
No, not at all.
Like, it's money from the bank.
Let him have his money.
Leave him alone.
Give him half.
I actually think he should have been left alone. During the 2014 retrial, Cunningham changed his plea to guilty on 2 counts of money laundering.
Okay.
And admitting to being reckless regarding the origins of £140,000 and £175,000 he handled in early 2005.
Okay.
The court accepted his plea and he received a 5-year suspended sentence considering his prior term served and health issues. The court also ordered that he forfeit £2.9 million and £45,000 seized during the investigation. So they were like, we accept that you served a period of time. We'll give you a suspended sentence.
Give us all the money.
You let us keep the money.
And he said,
okay. Cunningham has consistently maintained his innocence, claiming he was a scapegoat and unaware of the money's illicit origins. In 2019, you buried it in fucking compost bins.
Buddy, you buried it. Come on now.
It's in compost bins.
Come on.
He initiated a high court case seeking information on the seized funds, which had been repatriated to Danske Bank.
Danske.
In 2024. He announced plans to pursue a miscarriage of justice application with an Irish Attorney General and considered taking his case to the European Court.
Oh.
So that was last year.
It was last year?
Yeah, still, it's 2024. He stated, I feel that I was a scapegoat. I'm going to court to clear my name. If there was a scintilla of doubt I could clear my name, I would walk away from this legal fight.
Oh. Well, I don't know, the burying it in the garden is a bit sus. Did he bury it? Did somebody else bury it?
Well, if he's saying he's a scapegoat, there's probably an argument to say that he's
probably
saying,
somebody came with a gun and was like, and then he's like, I can't tell you that someone came with a gun because I'll get shot.
Yeah, and he, like, his job, he was like in finance. That's what he was doing.
Free my man.
Free him!
Free my man Cunningham.
In November 2005, nearly a year after the Northern Bank was stripped of its £26.5 million and one of its largest heists in the UK and Irish history, the PSNI arrested, guess who? Chris Ward.
Oh! Christo Christopher. I was wondering why Christopher's family were dumped in a forest. And that gentleman's wife was dumped in a forest.
It could just be Christopher's family weren't dumped in a forest because he's not the key holder. They just needed him to move and be the body in the place. Stop jumping to conclusions.
I will jump to all the conclusions.
Anyway, nearly a year after the bank was the 26.5 million was stolen, Chris Ward, a young Catholic bank employee from Poldlas, West Belfast, was arrested. Ward had been widely perceived as a victim of the crime and abducted at gunpoint, his family held at hostage and forced under threat to help move cash during the robbery. So when he was charged with robbery, false imprisonment and the possession of a firearm, the reaction was swift and deeply divided. For some, Ward's arrest was a breakthrough, a sign that the PSNI was making progress in a case that had embarrassed law enforcement and rocked the political establishment. Certain media outlets hinted that Ward's unusual composure during the robbery raised red flags. But for many in the nationalist community, the arrest looks less like justice and more like a scapegoating exercise. Mm-hmm. They said he looked calm. What would they want? Him screaming and crying on the floor? The lad was just trying to stay alive. The Belfast Telegraph ran a series of pieces that tracked the contradictions in the case. Some commentators suggested that the PSNI was under political pressure to deliver a high-profile arrest and Ward, young, working-class, Catholic and central to the operation, was conveniently a fall guy. The longer the case was dragged on without a suspect, the more heat came in on the cops. Chris Ward was an easy headline, wrote one columnist in 2006. So when the case came to trial in September of 2008...
Oh, fuck, 3 years, man.
Expectations were high. Prosecutors alleged that Ward had altered the staff rota to ensure he would be in place as the number two key holder. But during cross-examination and pre-trial disclosures, this claim began to unravel. By October 9th, just a few weeks into proceedings, the Public Prosecution Service abruptly withdrew its case, citing insufficient evidence. Justice Richard McLaughlin formally acquitted Ward on all counts, noting, "Given the decision to present no further evidence, I could not arrive at any verdict."
I apologise to Christopher Ward. I was wrong.
Yes, see?
Very sorry, Christopher Ward.
Ward walked free from Belfast Crown Court, flanked by supporters and visibly shaken. Outside, his solicitor, Niall Murphy, issued a scathing rebuke of the prosecution. Chris Ward was kidnapped, his family were terrorised, he cooperated under unimaginable pressure, and for 3 years he was forced to live under the weight of this false accusation. This was a disgraceful prosecution built on sand. Despite Ward's exoneration, no public apology was ever issued by the PSNI.
Surprise.
Many in the public and political sphere demanded accountability. Sinn Féin MLA Alex Muskay commented, "This case should have never gone to court. The treatment of Mr. Ward highlights the failures of a justice system that still hasn't won the confidence of our communities. Even members of the SDLP, normally more moderate on policing issues, raised concerns about the lack of oversight and the human cost of high-profile miscarriages of justice." So the aftermath of Chris Ward's arrest. Chris Ward withdrew from public life in the 10 years following the trial.
Ah, fuck, that's awful.
Although legally cleared, his reputation and career had suffered irreparably. Like, he worked in a bank.
Of course.
According to sources close to the case, he eventually moved abroad, seeking a quieter life away from the relentless speculation. Meanwhile, in public discourse remained uneasy. While some still believe Ward had been involved, others saw him as a tragic figure. While the Northern Bank robbery is a serious and still unresolved crime, over the years it has sparked some dark humour, satirical commentary and wry observation, particularly in Northern Ireland, where the blend of cynicism and wit is part of the culture, which is my favourite thing about the place. Here are a few of the funny quotes I found while I was researching this story. So, only in Northern Ireland could 26.5 million go missing and everyone know who did it, but no one gets charged. The IRA said they didn't do it, but they did. It was an internal matter. You'd think 26 million, they'd at least buy a better disguise than a fake PSNI badge and a Vauxhall van. The British government couldn't find the robbers, but at least they found a way to free Sinn Féin.
Sure.
Someone's that's like a political analyst in April afterwards. I was half joking. Chris Ward got kidnapped, forced to move millions, accused of robbing it, and then still had to clock in for work the next
literally.
Day.
Literally. Yeah. Got nothing.
Yeah. It was the biggest withdrawal in Northern Ireland bank history, and they didn't even use the ATM. If Ocean's 11 were from Belfast, they'd have done it in 2 Ford Transits and a balaclava. And that is the story of the Great Northern Bank Robbery.
Excellent job.
Thanks.
Fabulous job.
Thank you.
It's crazy that like 26 million... Like, that is so much money. Like, they, the whole thing, the thing that fascinates me the most about this is it was so perfectly executed.
Oh.
Like, they did not make a single mistake. They were able to get 26 million out of a bank in 2 vans.
Yeah.
And nobody knew.
Yeah.
Not one person.
No.
That's fucking wild.
Like, I know the trouble. Like, we both watched Say Nothing.
Yeah.
And the IRA are painted in this, like, almost comical light that they can't get anything right.
That they don't know what they're doing kind of thing.
That
yeah.
they're just making it up as they go along.
Yeah, no, they're not.
But as they got, as they moved truth, like, if that had been the IRA at the beginning of this whole thing kicking off, the Brits would have never won.
No.
I don't think the Good Friday Agreement would have ever happened.
Yeah, like I think there is that hope, but it's the whole paddy propaganda. It's the whole idea of it being bumbling idiots.
Yeah.
It's not. These people are fully trained. Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing. Like the Shergar thing was a mess.
Yeah, yeah.
But like...
But Shergar is the 80s.
And the Shergar is the 80s. And also, like, it's a fucking live animal. Do you know what I mean?
I
like,
think even... I think as time went on, they got better and better and better. And they got... Better and better is probably the wrong sentence.
No, you know they, I mean? They became... They learned how to do what they needed to do.
And I think if they had went in at that capability level, I think the Troubled's output would have been vastly different.
It's crazy. It's crazy that like...
Like where did all that money go?
Where is it?
Well, it's laundered.
It's laundered. Yeah, it's fully laundered. But like that was just... People knew where that was. Like that's the thing I think when stuff happens, like Belfast and Dublin is quite similar as well. Everybody knows. Like, everybody knows what's happened there.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing where, once again, say nothing.
Once again,
say nothing. Nothing.
Say nothing.
Shut the fuck up.
You want to, I tell you.
You want to
fuck up, boy,
nothing.
Fuck up.
But yeah, like, it's, that's so much fucking money. Like, and that's 2004
money. 2004
money! Do you know what I mean?
It's fucking...
It's 20 years ago, man. That's fucking double that now. But excellent job, Sarah Jane.
Thanks very much.
Abulabus.
Abulabus.
That was, I'm glad you did that episode. That's good, because we needed a bit of less fucking death and murder.
We're only doing 2 episodes.
No, I mean, I'm glad
See
you
Fiona
did that.
Fiona Pender's case got upgraded to murder.
I saw that it got upgraded to murder. Yeah, they're searching some land.
Someone asked me today is there certain criteria? And I was like, yeah, there is certain criteria they have to meet. So I was like, something has shifted.
Something's definitely shifted. Mm. Like, they don't just pull that out of their arsehole. Something
well, the DPP has to agree to
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So I wonder what it was. Maybe somebody got a little bit guilty. Maybe somebody said, I can't hold a secret
Maybe
anymore.
Maybe someone listened to this episode of this podcast 2 weeks ago.
Because I'll tell you, that poor girl, like... But anyway, yeah, that's something at least. But then, you know, this happens and then it's like
nothing.
Nothing.
Mm.
Nothing. And that has been the vanishing triangle they've obviously been talking about. That's been in the news frequently. And they're like, they're digging up land. Nothing. But anyway, Sarah, excellent job.
Thanks, guys. I hope everybody has a really nice week. And remember, as always,
Free Palestine.
Fuck Israel.
Fuck Israel.
And if you're in London on the 18th of June, go stand outside of the court and support your man, Mokara.
Shout out to Mokara. Shout out to Kneecap. Shout out to the fact that they're being used as scapegoats instead of what should really be done, which is the British government needs to stop funding Israel. And then BBC needs to start talking about Palestine as a genocide instead of fucking pussyfooting around it and saying, Hamas, go fuck yourselves, the BBC. You've never been on the right side of history and it continues to this day. But yes, shout out to everybody who is still supporting Palestine. Keep doing what you can. Don't let them forget. Don't let anybody forget.
Don't let the bastards grind you down.
Keep talking. Don't, because this is their hope, is that everybody's just going to forget about it.
But we won't. Free Palestine. Free Palestine forever. Yeah. Don't stop talking about it. Keep doing what you're doing. Have a really nice week.
We shall see you next week.
We shall see you next week. Emma is doing some asthma.
I'm doing jingling my earring.
Asthma!
Oh!
Colin!
Fuck. Colin, well, bye everybody!
I hope that's good.
Ah, Jesus, Colin! Emma's only after been on to the people on the Patreon asking them for weird body pictures. Weird fetish. What are we gonna do?
Just live her at it.
Pus-filled spots and swollen holes, amputated toes, boogers from my nose. It's Emma's weird fetish. Nothing gross is out of bounds. Balls and scabby mounds, bloody tissue, bad breath.
Weird fetish.
Hairy warts and little hands, picks of rotten spots and infected cuts. It's Emma's
weird fetish.
Hairy warts and little hands, hairy little hands, hairy little hands.
What's with the earwax? It's sick appeal. It's Emma's favorite. I cannot deal.
Oh, that's right, dirty bastard. Yes, syringe those fucking ears. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh Jesus, that's my type of shit right there. Get all that dirty fucking earwax out there now, you whore.
Weird fetish.